This is John Rappaport. Okay, so this is where we're going with this. The eerie similarities between the film White Noise and the disaster in East Palestine, Ohio. I'm going to read you a couple of snips here from articles just to give you the background. ABC News, 7 New York. When Ben Ratner's family signed up in 2021 to be extras in the movie White Noise, they thought it would be a fun distraction from their day-to-day life in blue-collar East Palestine, Ohio. Ratner, 37, is in a traffic jam scene, sitting in a line of cars trying to evacuate after a freight train collided with a tanker truck, triggering an explosion that fills the air with dangerous toxins. That's in the movie as an extra. In another scene, his father wears a trench coat and hat while people walk across an overpass to get out of town. Directors told the group they wanted them to look forlorn and downtrodden as they escaped the environmental disaster. The 2022 movie was shot around Ohio and is based on a novel by Don DeLillo. The book was published in 1985, shortly after a chemical disaster in Bhopal, India, that killed nearly 4,000 people, etc., etc. The book and film follow the fictional Gladney family, a couple and their four kids, as they flee an airborne toxic event and then return home and try to resume their normal lives. Ratner, in real life, tried to rewatch the movie in a few days ago and found he couldn't finish it, etc., etc. Okay. Now, from Salon.com, in the book White Noise, winner of the National Book Award, Jack Gladney, his wife Babette, and their many children from various marriages, are forced to evacuate after a train derails near their pastoral Ohio home, causing an explosion which morphs into a dangerous toxic cloud. Sound familiar? White Noise, the film, is set in Ohio, etc., etc. He and his family live in a small, picturesque town of Blacksmith, fictional. The movie White Noise was filmed almost entirely in Ohio, a prep school in Willoughby, Ohio, filling in for the college. Other classroom, lab, and student center scenes were shot at the University of Akron, Baldwin Wallace University, and Kent State University, while the family home is a real house in the college town of Oberlin. So the White Noise film was shot in various locations in Ohio. In real life, the train derailed in East Palestine, a small town near the Pennsylvania border. Some residents of East Palestine worked as movie extras during the filming of White Noise in their home state. The second part of the film, titled The Airborne Toxic Event, concerns what happens when a tanker truck carrying toxic flammable material crashes into a passing train due to the truck driver's drunk driving. The train derails in the countryside, cars smash into each other, and the tanker is crushed, releasing a viscous substance. A fireball erupts. The rest of the film deals with the aftermath of the crash. In the movie, an explosion from the derailment causes a toxic cloud that can be viewed for miles. It looks uncannily like the real scene in East Palestine of the dark purple-blue cloud witnessed over farmland and pastures, a cloud that emerged after the so-called controlled release of the train car's chemicals. In the fictional film, the cloud later resembles a massive purple-tinged storm cloud, etc., etc., okay? All right. So people are saying, well, this is impossible as a coincidence. And there are other examples of these so-called coincidences where fiction in the form of a novel, a movie, a TV show, whatever, preceded reality, and the reality was exactly or very much like the fiction, and this could not be coincidence. Okay? And this is called, this mystery, you might say, is solved by a theory called predictive programming, which I will get into in a minute. But right off the bat, to those who say, well, predictive programming is the only way that you could describe this absurd fiction first, reality later, right on its heels, unless you want to be a complete fool and call it a coincidence. Okay? And I'm suggesting right now, here's another possibility. Let's say that some terrorist group, or whether they're a wildcat radical environmentalist group or some group that is funded with elite money, sees the fictional film, or more likely reads the Dom DeLillo 1985 novel, and seizes on the idea expressed in the novel and then later in the film as an idea that they could use to stage a terrorist event. And seeing the possibilities in terms of impact on the public and so on, if they do it in a pastoral town somewhere in Ohio, like East Palestine. In which case, if that were true, I'm just saying if it were true, then the film wasn't really intentional predictive programming. The film wasn't made for that purpose. So that's another possible explanation as to how this came about. I'm not saying it's true. Now, predictive programming as a theory, I would say, has two parts. A prior film, let's say, lays out what's going to happen in real life because the elite planners want to expose what they're going to do. It's part of their diabolical MO and their code. Okay? That's part of the idea of what, or the theory of what predictive programming is all about. And secondly, the film comes first because it tends to condition audiences to be passive spectators. So when the real thing happens, the audience, the people, the public just sit there and accept it. Which, of course, you could generalize out to the entertainment industry is basically all about cultivating a spectatorship mode in society so people sit there and passively accept what they see on the screen. And so they don't do anything in real life. They don't take any action to try to change anything for the better. So those would be basically the two main elements of the theory of predictive programming. Okay? Now, I'm not denying and saying, well, this couldn't be, predictive programming couldn't happen, et cetera, et cetera. Certainly, there are CIA types at work, as well as wokey-dokies all over Hollywood who could insert this kind of reality into films intentionally. Yes, could be, could be. I lived in Los Angeles for about 35 years and knew people, you know, here and there in the film business, understood a lot about how the business operates. So I'll give you two things that are operating all the time in Hollywood, okay? All writers, many directors, and all agents are trying to put together projects and proposals that will get a yes from producers and studios. That's what most, not all, but most writers and some directors and most agents are all about in Hollywood. That's it, okay? They're just trying to get a yes on a proposal from producers and studios. And so one of their favorite techniques is the writer who's actually writing the script or the script proposal is patterning the script after past successes in the business, past films, TV shows, et cetera, that copy storylines and so on, because it's a way of selling it to producers and studios. Hey, this has worked before. It'll work again. It's a revenge flick. These are always popular, and we've got another one here about a guy who used to be a Navy SEAL, and now, you know, his sister is kidnapped by terrorists, and he goes on revenge, and blah, 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 blah. You see? That's all they're thinking about, period. Not about predictive programming or anything like that. And then the producers themselves and the studios are thinking only about dollars and box office, what a new project is likely, they hope, to do at the box office, and ratings, if it's TV, and so on and so forth. So within those bubbles, you wouldn't find a hell of a lot of predictive programming, or any, or much, because this is what most people in the industry are thinking about all the time. And that's it. Now, on top of that, predictive programming tends to make people believe that everything is being controlled and there's nothing to be done about. There's no way out. Because look, I mean, if they can pull this off, a film that's released a few months ago about what then comes about in East Palestine, Ohio, and a few of the people who actually live there were extras in the film. I mean, come on. If they have that much power and control, there's nothing we can do about anything. And there, you know, as if you know anything about my work, you know I make a radical departure from that nothing can be done bullshit and everything is being controlled. And it's out of our control. We have, you know, it's all doom. I never bought that and I don't buy that. So to the degree, whether true or not about predictive programming, as a theory, this is what it tends to do to people, especially people who are predisposed to doom and gloom. Aha, now I've got my thing here because now I can prove, so to speak, that, you know, there's nothing we can do about anything. It's all being controlled and everything is doom. No. Not at all. Time, my friends, is very long. So, again, I would say, if we're going to speculate about how the event happened in East Palestine, and somebody is going to say the most likely explanation is predictive programming, blah, 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 I'm going to say equally possible, if not more possible, if you want to go for terrorism and that sort of thing, would be some group fastens on the novel White Noise from 1985, bolstered by the film of a few months ago, and seizes on that idea as something we can do. Yeah, let's sabotage this train carrying these horrendous chemicals and, you know, cause a horrendous environmental disaster and attack America as a way of helping to take it down because we hate it and everything blah, blah, blah stands for. At least equally plausible to predictive programming. And for now, I'm sticking with what I spoke about in part one here as the most likely way that this happened, which is mega corporate malfeasance and crime. With the train, with the way these trains operate, with the lack of safety procedure, with the shortage of personnel, with too many cars in one train to save money, 150 cars in this one, 18,000 tons, with possible badly trained personnel who don't understand safety protocols, and the overriding fact that none of these trains should be allowed to transport something as toxic as vinyl chloride along distances, because the main use of vinyl chloride is making PVC pipe, and in most cases already in America, the vinyl chloride is made where the PVC pipe is made, and that should be the standard always, instead of transporting this shit in tanker cars. I'm going with the mega corporate explanation, and I'm also saying that this is a conspiracy, not only on the part of the Norfolk Railway, but we have tons and tons of evidence over the years and decades of corporate malfeasance and crime and cover-ups and bullshit explanations and colluding and buying off and bribing government regulators and agencies to escape criminal prosecution, to pay fines and walk away. That's on the record already. We know about that, the polluting corporations, which gives us many, many, many prior examples of exactly this kind of thing that happened recently in East Palestine. I'm not saying absolutely couldn't be predictive programming, but I'm working with what I believe are the best probabilities here. I wanted to take up this whole issue to look at it and talk about it, because lots of people are talking about predictive programming. Again, for those people who are using this theory as a way of saying nothing can be done about anything, everything is out of our control, look at how towering the power is that's making fiction into reality and planting it right in front of our eyes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Therefore, there's nothing we can do. To me, this goes against a real understanding of human nature and of centuries of struggle and bloodshed and pain and sacrifice to win the freedoms that we still have some fragments of. This is not just magic that you wake up in the morning and you have some measure of freedom. History is clear as to how deep the struggle was from basically slave societies all over the world, controlled top down completely and utterly, to what emerged in the American Revolution, the Articles of Confederation, the Constitution, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And to deny all of that and to say, well, that's just incidental, you see. But what's really going on here is reality is totally out of our control, and elites are in charge and always will be, and just sit back and eat candy and forget about it, is to deny the really real reality. This is John Rappaport. Thank you very much.